Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I'm Annie A.K.
And I'm Jessie.
And today we are going to be talking about two adaptations of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, including the 2008 BBC miniseries and the 1995 movie directed by Ang Lee.
Yes, I never got around to Sense and Sensibility. I hope everyone will forgive me that I didn't have an hour and a half to spare this week on that masterpiece.
There is still time. It's on Prime, right?
Yeah, it is on Prime. Maybe next time, yeah.
Maybe next time. Since you've been so busy, though, have you been able to consume any other media?
Yeah, other than Annie graciously rescheduling our recording so I could catch a showing of Hamilton last minute. So thank you. I'm currently reading Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow. It's a nonfiction book that describes his investigation into Harvey Weinstein and the attempts to bury and cover up his investigation. I don't read a ton of nonfiction, and the stuff I do tends to be more written more like a thriller. And this is definitely what that is. It's more a spy thriller than a dry, like, this is what happened narrative. I have about 100 pages left, but I obviously know what happens because he published the New Yorker story about the investigation. And this is less about the content of his investigation because obviously that was in the story and it is covered. But this is a lot more personal about him trying to get the story done at NBC and them repeatedly brushing him off and trying to bury the story because of Harvey's influence. And then eventually having to go to the New Yorker to publish and how he was followed by this private investigation, Israeli private investigation firm. And he was like literally being followed. And there was like a sting operation to get him to stop with the story. And it's crazy. I can't really believe that happened. And he's really putting everybody on blast here, who deserves it, of course. But yeah, I mean, it'll eventually be made into a movie, I'm sure.
Oh, I'd love that. Who'd have to play Ronan?
I mean, it's hard because he's so handsome. Like, he's so classically handsome. Yeah. And it's also funny because I don't know if you also listen to the Crooked Media podcast, the Pod Save America. And so John Lovett is on those and they're partners. And so John, or Jonathan as he calls him, is in the book frequently. And it's just very funny because, you know, we listen to John Lovett be like all funny and bubbly or whatever on this podcast, and then you see him in this other context, so it was a little jarring.
I really love when Ronan was on John Lovett's podcast and John basically just grilled him on his supposed inaccurate representation of how he talks on the audiobook.
I know, I don't really listen to audiobooks, but now I kind of want to hear it.
It sounds awesome. I've had this book on my list since it came out, which wasn't that long ago, but Ronan is so interesting. I'm looking forward to that. I can't wait till you finish it.
I'll probably finish it this weekend. I know usually I talk about books I finished, but this is the one that's kind of catching my fancy.
Yeah, you're also just usually a pretty fast reader.
Yeah, I'm reading this book a lot slower than I usually read books. Usually I can read books about like 100 pages a day, but this one I don't know why it's taking me a little bit longer. There's no reason. I'm enjoying it just as much as other books. So I don't know.
You're just savoring it differently. And Ronan put out a book just last year, too. I'm pretty sure it was the one about the Secretaries of State.
Oh, yeah. He talks about writing that in this book.
It was insane because I got to see him on his book tour for that.
Oh, really?
At the synagogue at 6th and I in D.C. And he was fantastic. But then I turned around and he had another book coming out. What the hell?
I know. I think he did a reading or something in Chicago, too. But I hadn't read the book yet and I was kind of over it. And I'm not good at, like, weeknight events unless they're Hamilton. but yeah, you should read it and then we can talk about it. And we can try to... I don't know what Jane would think about that. But.
Fancast Ronan and John.
Yeah, Fancast Ronan and John. Oh, God.
Jesse Eisenberg for John.
Oh, he would hate that.
He would.
but yeah, so what about you, Annie? What books, what media have you been consuming?
Well, like you, it's been a busy week. It's just the end of the year. Work's pretty crazy. I don't get as much time off. And on top of that, it was the holiday since we last recorded, but I was able to read A Gentleman's Guide to Vice and Virtue by Mackenzie Lee. And I had a lot of fun with it. I think I finished it in like 2 or 3 days. What seemed like just a guy going on some romp through Europe with his friend and his curmudgeon-y kind of sister turned out to be a lot of fun. And I've decided that, you know, bisexual regency should be a genre if it isn't already. And it's certainly mine, it turns out. It was turned out to be this story about this guy, and he is in love with his best friend, but he still has to like face his own white male privilege as this like aristocrat of English aristocrat. And also at some point his like misadventures, like him somehow being discovered naked in Versailles, in the Palace of Versailles, ends up with him going this like really crazy life threatening insane conspiracy laden adventure, which it was just a lot of fun. So I'm really, really glad I picked that up. I think I'm going to try to pick up the sequel after a couple more books. And I still want to read the Loki book that Mackenzie Lee wrote.
Oh, yeah. I saw the sequel floating around on Goodreads. So.
Yes. So I'm very interested to see where that goes because I guess, no, I don't want to spoil anything. But yes, it's somehow related to the main guy and his sister and his family. So that'll be pretty cool. And I, as usual, bought a book as opposed to dove into my regular to-be-read list and put it at the front of the queue. It's called 1,000 Fires. It is by Shannon Price. The description that I got was The Outsiders Meets the Iliad.
No way.
It's really hard to turn down that kind of description. So I'm looking forward to that. I think one of the main characters is a woman of color. I think she's actually Filipino. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't know how Jane will feel about gangs.
You have to report back.
She might think it was something fascinating.
I do.
Do you know what you're going to read after Ronin?
Yes. So after Ronin, I got a library book. So due to the nature of libraries, you have to read it pretty fast. So it's called, oh my gosh, I'm really excited about reading it. It came out this year. It's called Red at the Bone by Jacqueline Woodson. And I actually don't really know what it's about, but I think it's about New York in like the 2000s. Mm-hmm. It seems short because after that I want to read Into the Dream House by Carmen Marie Machado, her new book.
Yeah.
So those are my next on tap. But also, all my library book holds always come like available at the same time. So that like ruins my whole plans.
As is the way with books, there's always more books. The curse and the blessing that is books.
Oh yeah.
But for now, we'll have to put that on hold.
Yes, Annie. Apparently, according to our notes here, we have listener emails.
We do, and you're gonna have to hear me read them. So we had two wonderful listeners. All our listeners are lovely. We had two wonderful listeners who wrote in to us. So, and they both were totally fine with us sharing this. So I just wanted to read some of it with you. First is from Liz, who is amazing and just a delight of a person. And she came from a different perspective regarding Marion and Brandon.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So it says, I agree with you that their relationship was neatly tied up and could have benefited from more explanation, even a sweet story of when he caught her eye in a new way. However, I do think it's believable for Marianne to grow fond of Brandon and eventually love him. But I don't think that's him settling. I think the growth that Marianne shows after her illness is supposed to be the platform for which her growth continues. She still wants love and happiness and to marry for love. But perhaps her ideal of what love is changed from a girlhood notion to something she realizes does make her happy and she can provide herself. Youth allows for mistakes. We all have had flings with fuckboys and thought we could be the one who changes someone for the better. Marianne did that with Willoughby, but from that she got burned and realized she wouldn't be happy with him, so that caused her to change her view on what love actually is. Perhaps it's because I very much view myself as a Marianne, and I'm speaking to two Eleanor, so I apologize if it might be defensive, but I can speak from personal experience of how I long viewed love and the love I wanted in life from a partner. And that led to some very bad heartbreak, from falling head over heels and thinking that we would make it work to trying to be the one who would change him to quote-unquote settling because somebody wanted to be with me. None of those things were actually what I truly wanted, but what I believe love was, mostly from fantasy and books and movies. But when I finally thought about what I wanted and what I needed in the kind of love I wanted, I found it in someone who could very well be a Colonel Brandon himself. He's someone I knew for a few years, but never really regarded. And then things change.
Oh.
By no means do I want to tarnish my last sappy paragraph, but I did just want to say one thing I didn't like about Colonel Brandon and Marion is that, is this where the idea that men can get out of the friend zone? If they just stick around long enough, she will see. Brandon is too good for that, but I feel like some douchey bro type read Austin in college and was like, see, the dude can get the girl. Brandon is not that, but I can see how quickly it was wrapped up, how that could be taken. Liz, I love you. I just
do. Oh, I love that. That's so lovely.
Wasn't it? Thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, you and I have been a bit of a witness to this development in Liz's life and are very happy for her. And it's sweet to see it with this in this kind of context, because I do agree. I do agree that growing up a little bit at the ripe old age of 17 through 19, Marianne definitely could have changed and just had her romantic ideas, but they're slightly different, evolved.
Yeah, she's growing. Like, she's growing throughout. You know, she sees Eleanor and her older sister, and I love that she, like, grows and her ideas about what love is change, and it's good to hear from a Marianne's perspective, because she's right, we are both Eleanors.
We certainly are. I do agree that her illness was something that could have changed it, and I can definitely see how that went from her being, you know, like, sobbing and weeping over Willoughby to that resoluteness of, I will be fine, I'm going to move on, it would have been bad if I were with him. I just wish that we got a little more of the interaction between Marianne and Brandon too.
Yeah, and I actually, not to like burn pod or whatever, but that's something that I think some of the adaptions do really well, particularly I think the movie, when it's Brandon that like goes out and like takes care of Marianne when she gets sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, I need to do something. I need to like help her. And he's the one that brings her mother to him and to her. And I think maybe there are some little things that the adaptions do that kind of brought me around to it a little bit more than the book.
They fill in the blanks a little more. They're gaps, I guess. Yeah.
Fill in the little gaps.
But I mean, no, by no means would I ever say that Marianne would in no way be interested in Brandon. Because obviously, I mean, coming from the two of us, we love Brandon so much.
Oh yeah, Brandon's great. He fought in a war.
He's a real actual soldier. And I don't also think that this is a friend zone thing. We've talked about it before, but like,
yeah.
And I do appreciate that the adaptations didn't do that, where they kind of made him like yearning in a way where he seemed to be hoping and plotting that something would happen. He just always generally seemed like happy to be around her. And if you realize that Marianne was into Willoughby, and he's like, ah, okay, so I just won't interfere.
Yeah. No, I'd forgotten about that scene where he like comes to Eleanor and says, okay, are they engaged? And Eleanor's like, probably soon. And he like bows out.
And he just says that line about wishing her
endeavor to deserve her.
Brandon, you marvelous beast. So, Liz, thank you so much for your email.
Yes, thank you.
We love hearing from you.
So lovely.
The other email, because we got two, Jesse.
This is a really big moment. This is like a stepping stone.
Have we made it? I think we finally made it.
I think this is the sign that you've made it.
So this one is from Regina. She says, I've enjoyed reading Sensibility along with the both of you. Wonderful. It's one of my favorites. I wanted to share a theory I had with reading it that may or may not result in some SNS fan fiction written by me later.
Ooh. Heck yes. Give it to me.
We all know how well suited Lucy Steele and Robert Ferrars are for each other, being cut from the same mold and all, and how they were thrown together during season one in London, which resulted in Lucy's affections transferring from Edward to Robert. Well, the theory I'm proposing is that Lucy and Robert were in love this entire time, and they forged a plot against Edward to disinherit him.
Oh my God, I love that.
This so much. It's never made clear how much Robert was to inherit, but it's a well-known fact in English aristocracy that the eldest son inherited the lion's share of the estate, if not all of it. Where would that leave Robert, whose self-worth is determined by the worldly possessions around him? It would not be implausible that he overheard his horrid mother warn Edward about marrying an unsuitable woman. It is likely that Robert visited Edward while in Plymouth, where he met Lucy. I can just see Lucy ignoring boring Edward and being mesmerized by the flashy younger brother Robert. They fall in love and worry about a future together due to lack of money, since Lucy has no dowry and he may not inherit enough or anything at all. So, Lucy and Robert hatch a plan for Lucy to form an attachment with Edward, who was always said he wants to live a simpler life in the country. Really, Robert is doing his boring, honorable brother a favor by getting him engaged to an unsuitable match so that he'll be free of his mother's expectations. Now, Lucy gets Edward to propose, and they have a long engagement. Edward thinks it's to wait out his mother until his mother dies, and he's free to marry her, but it's really Lucy's plan to keep Edward fridged from... forming any attachments with other women until the time was right. Eleanor threatened these machinations and forced their hand to spring the trap. Everything went according to their plan. After it is settled irrevocably on Robert, Lucy calls off the engagement and marries her true love, Robert Ferrers. They live happily ever after. It doesn't quite well fit with some of the scenes with Lucy and Robert together, but it's a fun idea. And I think you should write it, Reg.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is canon now. Like, this is perfect. Like, this is established fact.
I don't know if the adaptations would jive with it very well, but I would 100% watch one that did.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. And the adaptions do kind of try. I think, is it the miniseries when Lucy meets Robert at the party and they kind of, like, bond on the dance floor?
Yes. I did enjoy that part, and we'll talk about that more, but...
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I'm
No, don't apologize. I think that could work, and I heartily encourage that you write this out, Reg, because we would read it. We would read it hard and fast.
Oh, yeah. Call me in. Thank you. That was great.
Yeah. We have awesome listeners.
But that was high caliber of emails.
Really was. I'm so flattered. Well, we'll continue to endeavor not to waste your guys' time.
Yeah. That's putting it lightly.
All right, so the two adaptations we'll be talking about today, like we said, is the Ang Lee version that came out in 1995 and the BBC miniseries. The Ang Lee version from 1995 was written by and starred Emma Thompson along with Kate Winslet, Alan Rickman, and Greg Weiss, aka Mr. Emma Thompson. It earned $135 million worldwide, was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, and it actually won one for Emma Thompson for Best Adapted Screenplay. The BBC miniseries was released on, well, BBC, in 2008, was written by Andrew Davies, who's written a lot of other different...
Yeah, he wrote the Pride and Prejudice one, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
What else? It was directed by John Alexander and starred Hattie Morahan and Charity Wakefield, along with Dan Stevens, David Morrissey, and Dominic Cooper. It was aired in 3 parts, starting January 1st, 2008 in the UK, and attracted an average of 6 million viewers per episode, which seems like a lot of people. The first episode also became one of the top 10 most streamed programs on BBC iPlayer.
Oh. That's cool. That's a fun fact.
It's nice to... Well, it was 2008, but still nice to know that Jane can still pull him in.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, regarding Emma Thompson's thing, I do remember her on an episode of a panel show called QI, which was hosted at the time by Stephen Fry, and she was talking about having, you know, one of those really old word processor-type computers at the time when she was writing this. And her computer stopped working, and she just carried the whole entire heavy thing to Stephen Fry's house and was just, like, bawling, just going, please save my screenplay.
Oh, no. I mean, I wonder how many good screenplays we've lost in the world because of, like, old world or word processors.
That had to have been horrifying, but look where it brought her. It brought her
the Academy Award, yeah.
Oscar, yeah. I mean, obviously, we already know the story of Sense and Sensibility. I think it would be fairly repetitive if we spent time talking about what happens. We've been doing that for like 6 months.
We're going to talk about like the differences. So I don't think we need to go into a full summary, but just a peek behind the curtain here. The way Andy and I structured this wasn't adaption by adaption. We just kind of had some discussion questions and wrote out some initial thoughts about each adaption and how it related to the question. So that's kind of how we're going to structure our conversation here.
Yeah. So to start with, which one did you love more?
Yeah. For me, I think it was the 1995 movie. Full disclosure, I watched the miniseries first and then the movie because I figured I'd like the movie better. And there were things I did like better, to be honest, in the miniseries. But not to be like a smug book reader, but I felt like the movie was a better adaption and focused more on the sisters and the bond between them rather than the men. Whereas the miniseries maybe was a little bit more involved in what was going on with the men's story. I really liked the adaption choices and the casting better overall with the movie as well. But there were a few exceptions that we'll talk about later. But the movie's a classic, right? I mean, absolutely. Academy Award nominated and they were both great. I liked the miniseries a lot more than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. But the movie, I think, was just a little tighter, just really good. Like, we'll get into it later, but there's not a lot I would add. So, yeah, what about you, Annie?
This is possibly the problem with us, with this show being hosted by two Eleanors, because I completely agree. In that I ended up watching the miniseries first because I thought, well, it's probably going to be inferior to it. And I'm going to spend the whole time comparing it to the movie if I watch it first. So I watched the miniseries first, and I did really enjoy it. I'm really, really glad I saw it. And I loved a lot of the casting, some of it less than others. But there were some ways where I think they tried to be more literally accurate to the book. But the movie kind of synthesized a lot of it a lot better into what I think Jane was trying to do with the book. And it's really hard to just compete with Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson working off an Emma Thompson written script.
Mm, no, that's true.
Plus, I think they tried to make the miniseries a little sexier to try to draw in a wider crowd.
Oh, God. We'll talk about this later, but I'm so mad about it. I'm so mad.
Some of them in more obvious ways than one.
No, I'm still mad about it. I'll rant about it later, but I'm still mad. I gotta, like, work myself up to it.
There was a quote here that referred to the miniseries as, quote, unquote, a voyage of burgeoning sexual and romantic discovery. And I was like, that's not the point.
That is not at all what I would have said about this book or this story.
No.
That makes me cringe.
I mean, there's a lot of love story stuff, but it's not the driving factor. It's just kind of the circumstances that they're working on, I feel like, based on their actual personalities. But this is the BBC website quote.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not good.
No. I mean, I don't think it was too obvious. It bled too much throughout the miniseries. But when it does happen, you're like, really, guys, do we have to do this?
I do think the miniseries took stuff from the movie, because there were some scenes that were identical almost in them, mm-hmm. that weren't in the book. Like, I think there's the scene where, in both adaptions, where the mother is, like, laying out options on the table, these beautiful, like, house drawings of, like, where they could stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what is this? Like, I don't understand. And it was in both adaptions. And then, like, the scene in the library with Margaret, like, hiding.
And the Atlas.
Yeah.
I don't remember an Atlas playing that, being that important.
No.
I do remember, like, talk of their mother, of Eleanor having to be kind of the practical one when it came to their next move, and her mother wanting to move out of their home as soon as possible to get away from the other Dashwoods, but nothing specific like that.
Like, it was never a thing in the books, really, that Margaret was someone that, like, hid around.
Mm-hmm.
Or was, like, some sort of genius.
I like that she was slightly murdery.
Liked the Margaret in the adaptions, because I liked her a lot better as, like, a little girl. Because I didn't really picture her like that when I was reading. So I liked in both adaptions that she's much younger and very precocious and, like, runs around and hides and, like, has a treehouse and all that. And both adaptions kind of had that. And they both had, I mean, we'll talk about this. They both had Edward playing with her as a way to endear himself to Eleanor.
It is kind of a cheap trick, by the way.
Oh, it's such a
be really cute with a cute little girl in a really unencumbered, sincere way.
Oh, it's such a cheat. But the fact that both of them did it, I was kind of like, okay, you watched the movie, kind of, and made your movie thing off of that. So,
I mean, Eleanor loves her sister, so of course winning over her sister is gonna work real well on her.
True. So, I mean, we kind of, like, started talking about this already, but what were your favorite and least favorite casting decisions? things in both the miniseries and the movie.
So I don't know the actresses who played Marion and Eleanor very well at all.
Mm-hmm. I thought they were miniseries.
They were good. Yeah. In the miniseries, very common. I thought they did a good job. And you could see the two contrasts between them as people. But again, it's really hard to compete against Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson, who I think just did really wonderful work and had this wonderful chemistry as sisters. So that was pretty great. I loved, in the miniseries, Dan Stevens. I thought he was a great Edward.
He was so good.
He was, like,
so good.
He was. He had that neuroticism and not introversion, but just, like, not
awkward.
Awkward, but not playing the weird, like, small chat game and playing nice just because he has to. But he wasn't super standoffish. I thought he was fairly charming. I thought it was really good. I actually think I prefer him to Hugh Grant.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that. I think, for me, I liked Hugh Grant a lot, and there were some moments that I thought he nailed, but there were other moments where I thought he was almost, like, too charming to be Edward. And I that might just be my bias, because I've only really seen him play these, like, cocky assholes. You know, like, when I see him, I've seen him in so many things. I mean, he's so ubiquitous and so good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of him, I kind of immediately go to the Bridget Jones place.
Yes.
And it's so hard for me not to read his, like, little snarky comments that I think are made to be, like, jokes and, like, earnest in the mini in the miniseries, but to read them with that kind of, like, snark.
Yeah, he's not a shy person.
Yeah.
He's got too much personality. Maybe he could have been a Willoughby.
He totally could have been a Willoughby. And that's, you know, that's kind of why I was confused when we were reading the casting for it. Because he could have been either. But I do like him as an Edward, but I agree with you about Dan Stevens being better, I think.
Yeah, he just nails it. He finds just that sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a side note, I love Dan Stevens in general. I think he's a fantastic actor. I was kind of warm on him for a really long time because, like, I got it. I was like, I watched Downton Abbey. He was very nice. Yes. Handsome cousin Matthew. He's great. But I've just really grown to appreciate him as an actor, and I'm actually going to get to see him on Broadway next year.
Oh, my God. That's so cool. Oh, he's so talented.
He's so very good. And he's going to be taking over for Johnny Flynn's role in Hangman against Mark Addy. And, like, Johnny Flynn's amazing in that role. He's stunning. It's the role that made me a fan in the first place. I could not imagine anyone else who would ever play him. And then they announced Dan Stevens. I went, so I'm buying my ticket right now.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that you like Johnny Flynn, Annie. No, I'm kidding. Because obviously,
oh, really?
Like, I know you're before.
Obsessed. I'm so shy about it, too.
Yeah. Did you you like him, really?
Yeah, well, let's just wait until Emma comes out. I know that you're a big fan of Dom Cooper, too.
Oh, my God, Dominic Cooper. I think we've talked about him on this show before. I love him. And I love him, like, I love him in his Mamma Mia. I love him in his Mamma Mia 2. I love him in his Preacher. I am obsessed with him. He was my favorite Willoughby. His eyes are just, like, so dark and, like, lovely. I could stare at him all day. He's short like me, so it's fine.
I actually thought it worked out kind of well that he is so much personality and charm in this, like, shorter person, and then going against David Morrissey's Brandon, especially in, like, the duels and stuff, and you're like, oh.
The duel was ridiculous.
It was so unnecessary. But, like, even despite his height, the height differences, because I'm not calling him short or anything.
No.
But despite his height, you know, the height differences, he still manages to, like, fill up a room just like David Morrissey, which I thought was really well done.
Oh, yeah, I love him. I forgot that. I'm looking at his filmography right now. I forgot that he was Howard Stark in in Captain America. I was like, he's definitely in some sort of Marvel property.
He is.
Oh, God. I loved him as Willoughby. He just is, I think you have in your notes that he was made for parts like that, and he totally was, because he can play both the, like, charming jerk and the, like, romantic love interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was perfect. And I feel terrible because I texted Annie while I was watching. I was like, who is this guy playing Willoughby in the movie? Like, he's not good looking enough. And you, and Annie texted me back. She's like, you mean Mr. Emma Thompson? And then I went down a Google rabbit hole and felt instantly bad. He's very good looking. He was very charming. But I'm going to put my tick in the Dominic Cooper column. I'm sorry.
He just has the fact that he's not Dom Cooper held against him. That's all.
I think he was also playing Willoughby maybe a little bit more wounded.
Mm-hmm. Softer.
Yeah, it was much softer, I think, than Dominic Cooper. And that could be just the way that they structured the miniseries adaption.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's just too nice a person in real life to be a true Willoughby.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure Dominic Cooper is very nice. He's had very good girlfriends, so I doubt that they would be with him if he was a jerk.
He has a very enviable love life. But no, I mean, up until this point, Dom Cooper has also played characters very similar to this. It was kind of in his, like, exactly in his wheelhouse, like having seen him in Starter for 10 and History Boys. And I remember when Mamma Mia came around, I was like, all right, when's the other shoe going to drop on this guy? Because he can't be this nice.
For me, my biggest thing was Fanny.
Oh, Fanny.
Fanny and Eleanor, I think, were the biggest differences between the actors mm-hmm. in the movie and the adaption. Because Emma Thompson, I thought, was just so much better of an Eleanor than the miniseries Eleanor, who I'm forgetting her name, Hattie. But, I mean, that's also because she's Emma Thompson, so it's, like, really unfair to do a comparison. I thought that the miniseries Fanny was just so much better.
She was excellent. She was so evil, and she had fun doing it.
She was really chewing the scenery in a way that the other Fanny, who I love, because she's also the mom in Succession, and she's just evil and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But it was much hammier in the miniseries, which I really liked for a character like Fanny.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of her in the book, so she's kind of a character in the book. So it kind of makes sense that she would be fairly similar in the adaptation, too. Maybe they're just trying to go a little more grounded with the adaptations in general, though, especially the movie.
Grounded, although the scene where Lucy tells Fanny that she's going to marry Edward was, like, unbelievable in the movie. Unbelievable. Like, the whole conversation, and you see Lucy, like, building up to it, and then she, like, whispers in her ear, and she says, "There's a viper in my bosom," I wrote down the line. It was so that was absolutely wonderful. So, I mean,
perhaps it actually had more of an impact because she was so much more restrained throughout.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think it's just probably a taste thing rather than one was so much better.
Because that actress whose name is currently escaping me, she's in a lot of different things and she's fantastic in basically everything I've ever seen her in.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly like, I love that both Fannies had like the most ridiculous hair.
Oh, the hair, the curls, the, like, the curly cues? The
really restrained, strict, perfectly formed coils.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. And I liked at the end, there's a moment when Colonel Brandon is throwing out coins in the movie. And you can see Fanny telling John, go, get the money, get the money. I'm pretty sure that was meant for the kids.
Oh my god, I missed that.
It was funny. I was just watching her the whole time.
Oh, I missed that.
Is she going to?
So before we get to our one disagreement, we both agree that Alan Rickman is the superior Colonel Brandon.
Oh, I don't. Yeah. No offense to David Morrissey, who I saw also in Hangmen and is very good. He's a fine actor. He is not unattractive. He has range, but he's not Alan Rickman.
No. No one's Alan Rickman. Alan Rickman was perfect. I loved him. He was perfect. I can't get his face out of my head when he sees Marianne playing on the piano for the first time.
Just everything about him, you could just see his heart crumbling and rebuilding and crumbling every single time. Of course he fell in love with her. You could see it in his eyes.
Ugh, you're so good.
Him.
We're definitely like fangirls of Alan Rickman, I think.
That's because we have eyes and a heart.
That's true. But we do, so I think this might be our biggest disagreement ever on the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bring it on.
I loved Hugh Laurie as Mr. Palmer. What can I say? I'm sorry.
No, I did love. Did I write that I didn't?
Yeah, you did. You wrote in the notes. You said Hugh did a great job, but I'm not sure he was quite right.
Oh,
this is where we disagree.
I was really tired when I wrote all of it. No, I love Hugh, obviously. Hugh is amazing. I think he's fantastic. I've watched House for so many years.
Yes, House is great.
I listened to Hugh Laurie's music. I love Hugh.
Okay, that's fair. You've proved it to me that you like Hugh.
I love Hugh. But yeah, I kind of liked him too much.
So here's my thing with Mr. Palmer, who I love, right? Because yeah. He's like barely in the book, but he is like such a jerk at first. And you're like, oh my God, like here's this dude who is very blah with his wife and uninterested and comes off as rude. But then as the book goes on, he becomes like Eleanor starts to like get him. Mm-hmm. As a person, you understand him and understand his personality. And there's a moment in the movie where, because he's meaner in the movie, I think. And it might also be because Imelda, Staunton? Yeah, mm-hmm. Who plays Mrs. Palmer is fantastic. And he comes to Eleanor when Marianne's sick and says, you know, let me know if you need anything. Like, he's just so wonderful in that moment. Mm-hmm. And it's really his true personality kind of like comes out. And there's so many times in this book where, you know, either it's Edward being awkward and hiding his personality or Willoughby also hiding, you know, who he truly is. And even Colonel mm-hmm. Brandon, who's just really internal. It's kind of nice to see this character be read and be seen as in a different way than he was initially read. So it's a small moment. And I thought that Hugh Laurie really pulled it off in a way that I appreciated in just like a couple of small beats.
He's definitely Hugh does a fantastic job making him more sympathetic. Mm-hmm. Which I did like, and I did like that when Mr. Palmer is that person in the book. I think I loved cranky Mr. Palmer so much, though.
Yeah.
And I know that Hugh can bring the crankiness. Maybe he hasn't achieved that moment yet in his career where he could just reach down and find those truly Scottish Presbyterian crankiness to him that I know he has. So maybe I'm just like a little of my expectations were just unrealistic for the time.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not like that big of a deal. Like, they nailed all the other parts, but
fantastic. I do want to point out that Emma Thompson has on multiple occasions pointed out that when she met Hugh, they were still in university back in Cambridge, I think. Hugh came in to audition for the Cambridge Footlights that she was a part of with Stephen Fry. And she has more than once referred to him as the most beautiful human she had ever seen. She was so in love with him when they first met. But I love how much she loves Hugh Laurie.
That's wonderful. I love hearing stories that actors are just as lovely or handsome and attractive in person that they are.
I just want Emma to be my like super cool aunt.
Oh, absolutely. 1,000%.
All right. Anyone else that we wanted to cover?
No, I think we can move on to favorite and least favorite adaptation choices, because I think a lot of the meat is here, this kind of stuff that we've been kind of dancing around. I wrote a lot down here. So, oh my God, I just read I was looking at the trivia for the movie.
Uh-huh.
And it says, Emma Thompson has recounted that during the scene where Colonel Brandon approaches Eleanor and Marianne on horseback, many takes were ruined by the horse's flatulence. Eventually, they were forced to shoot the scene with the farting horse, and the rather loud reports later were edited out of the soundtrack.
Oh,
it says
wonderful.
That Hugh Laurie was her first choice for Colonel Brandon.
Oh, I could see that.
So anyway, first adaptation choice that I had was that I thought that both the movie and the miniseries kind of found a way to deal with Margaret, or Meg, as she is in the miniseries for some reason. I don't know. Did you catch that? Is her name Meg in the miniseries?
I did.
Yeah.
That's not in the book that I remember.
No, it's not. It's not.
We don't talk about Margaret nearly as much for her to have a nickname.
No. But we talked about it a little bit, but I really liked what they did with her is like the younger sister who causes trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Although sometimes she was like in it a little too often, maybe. I don't know.
I thought they integrated her well as opposed to this thing that's just there and then she's gone and she'll come back as a plot device and then she's gone.
Yeah,
I think she filled out the rest of the household in a nice way where she was just a nice young girl. And I don't remember what she said, but when they were talking about the Dashwoods coming in the miniseries, I think I like the miniseries one slightly more.
Yeah.
And they're just talking about John and Fanny coming to visit, and she was just basically like, I guess we'll just have to kill them.
Well, like, she's Lucy Boynton now, who's like a famous actress in her own right.
Yes.
No, yeah, we don't need to talk about Margaret that much, but I thought it was an interesting choice that they put her in at all and then gave her more of a part.
Yeah, they did take away in the movie, I think, when she witnesses Willoughby taking a lock of Marianne's hair. That's like, one of her adaptation choices, one of the book choices that's actually belongs to her. They took it away from her.
Oh, that's so true. I missed that entirely. So, yeah, so this is one that I thought was kind of funny. The movie doesn't have Anne Steele in it, which I didn't really mind, but her character was really fun in the miniseries because she's the one that blows it to Fanny that Lucy's engaged to Edward. Yeah. So I really liked what the movie did with Lucy being the one to tell Fanny. I thought that worked really well. So I didn't miss Anne, but I thought it was kind of interesting the way that they just were like, well, don't need her.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of don't. She's just there to be kind of like the more pathetic sister, kind of. Mm-hmm. The miniseries, I love how they wrote her, and the actress actress portrayed her, just really hilarious and obnoxious and unable to shut up.
Oh, yeah. No, that was, like, delightful.
It was a wonderful moment. And then you had Edward and Lucy walk into the room just in time. It was a good moment.
Oh, that's my favorite. Remember when we were reading and I said, I want to see that in the adaptions? Like, that's the scene I want to see the most.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. The scene I wanted to see the most was when Edward walks in on Lucy and Eleanor.
And you got it twice.
I got it twice. It was great.
Oh, both were really good. I also really like both of them. In both adaptations, you have Edward coming in just really wanting to talk to Eleanor. And it's so evident in the way both of them play it. And they're so focused that neither of them notice either Lucy.
Oh, God. It's so perfect.
And I love that moment. And it hurts to watch. And then Eleanor has to be like, you know Lucy, right? Right? You've met Miss Steele.
I thought it was actually better maybe in the miniseries for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's because Dan Stevens played it better. But I remember it having more of an impact when I watched it in the miniseries. So I think my favorite adaption choice was something that they did in both the miniseries and the movie. And that was that they gave us the look into how Edward and Eleanor fell in love. I think the book, you sort of take it for granted, like you hear about it, but in both the adaptions, you show Edward showing up and the connection that he has with Eleanor, and it's just so important, I think.
Absolutely, and I know we talked about how frustrating it was in the book sometimes, because most of what we heard about Edward was through Marianne's eyes, because Eleanor being Eleanor, she was always like downplaying it, not really going into it. You had Marianne talking about how, you know, she's like, why did he say goodbye to you like a brother? He's not very exciting.
Yeah.
He can't read aloud for shit. He's so boring when he has no passion. He just talks about leaves.
Oh, it's such a good scene in the movie when he's reading from the book and then Marianne just interrupts and does it so much better.
And everyone wakes up.
Yeah.
Which is hard to imagine Hugh Grant reading something and it's just boring and droll and painful and everyone's nodding off. But there we are.
Right? The man does Shakespeare. It's probably harder for him to be bad at acting.
Yeah, so I suppose we can commend him on that effort. But I love in both the movie and the miniseries that part of it was just showing them actually like having chemistry when they talked and laughing and occasional and all that stuff. But also, he endeared himself to Eleanor by having like a good chemistry and being very very pleasant and nice and having fun with her sisters too. Because Eleanor loves her sisters more than anything in the world. You got to get in with her sisters to get in with Eleanor, and that's exactly what he does without even trying. It's just who he is.
Yeah, you got to get. What's the line from the Spice Girls song?
How did I know you were gonna go there?
You gotta get with, because you said it. You said I gotta get with your sisters. But no, the scenes in both adaptions when Edward is playing with Margaret or Meg or whatever are very cute and do a lot to endear you to Edward because you're in the book. There's so many moments where our discussion went to whether or not Edward even cared about Eleanor, and so you really have these moments. Like we even have in the movie. which I really liked, Edward almost tells Eleanor, remember? Like, they're in the stable, mm-hmm. and he tells her, you know, about when he grew up and he was young, and he's just about to tell her before Fanny interrupts. So you really have these moments where you see their connection and you see how reticent Edward is to leave her, even though in the miniseries he gives her the book that's like, you're a great friend.
No. I thought it was a little underplayed how he was trying to like keep that friend boundary mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, that's a good way of phrasing it.
But yeah, it was still there. Not as, I think, well, I mean, I feel like even in the book it wasn't really evident until at the end of the book when he's mentioning that he did. You're like, well, I guess you didn't try that hard, and that checks out. There was a moment I did like in the adaptation that mirrored, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but it was when one of the maids at the house was taking out the rugs to be beaten again because Fanny was like, my brother is coming, and even though you just did it last week, you should do it right now. So Eleanor just starts thwacking at it herself, even though they don't need to be done. And in my mind, that just kind of was parallel to Edward and his wood chopping because he really had to get his frustration out.
Oh, the wood chopping.
That was a good scene. It was like, in my nose I have, is this the Mr. Darcy in the fountain scene for this miniseries?
It absolutely is. He's even wearing like the same shirt.
Yes, the blousy shirt. He's got the sweat. He's doing manly things. He's talking about something real that she can relate to.
No, it was a very like sexy scene.
It was. In a very subdued, very Austin kind of way. As opposed to some of the explicitly sexy scenes.
Speaking of, we can get into my least favorite adaptation choice. And it was in the miniseries, and it was starting with some horrible sex scene. Annie, I thought I was watching the wrong thing when I turned it on. I was like, what the hell is this? This is not my Jane Austen.
No, it's so confusing. And I've talked about this before with like Sanditon. I'm like, yes, it's sexy, but in like its restraint. But I just,
it's not what the book is about. Like, just like, you have to start, like, I've never been to screenwriting school. I've never, like, I'm not a writer like that. But it's just so offensive to me that they were like, we have to start this miniseries with this ridiculous sex scene that is not really consequential to the plot at all.
Yeah, that's not exactly the main component of like poor Eliza's story that you want to get out of this.
No, it's not at all the main part of it. It makes me so mad. And also it kind of ruins, like, because they keep Willoughby's face in the shadows, but you can tell it's Dominic Cooper. Like,
I know those lips.
You said is the lips, yeah. And so it just made me so, because it ruins the surprise. Because when you meet Willoughby, you have to think that he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you might be like a little skeeved out by him.
Yeah. He's like a little clueless.
Yeah, but you have to think that he really loves Marianne. I mean, because he does. Mm-hmm. Like, even though he's a bad dude, like, he loves her. He says it explicitly. So it just ruins that surprise element. I'm so mad about it. I'm so mad. Like, it's not an important part, but
it's cheap.
It's so cheap, and it's insulting. Is this not what the story's about? The story isn't even about the men and really getting married. It's about the sisters.
It really is. And I think you brought up the point at some point. This is not their story. This is the Dashwood sisters' story.
Mm-hmm. It's not Brandon's story. Mm-mm. That's another thing that they do. They also give us, the miniseries gives us these weird scenes between Brandon and Willoughby. Like, Brandon pulls him aside. And he's like, what are your intentions to Marianne? I was like, hold up. At this point in the story, we're supposed to be fine with Willoughby. Like, Brandon hasn't proven himself. Like, what are you doing, like, pulling him? What are your intentions? Like, you're not her dad. You're not her brother.
It is paternalistic in kind of a weird way. And the fact that, like, that he is so much older than her, it does make it weirder, almost. He's not supposed to be active. Like, the main part of Brandon is that he steps back and he keeps his eyes open. Mm-hmm. And he trusts Eleanor to take care of her sister with the information. And it's just, it's repetitive too, that you have like him being, you know, telling Eleanor, I hope that Marianne is happy. I hope that Willoughby will be good enough for her. That's it. He doesn't have to be all like, well, And then the duel.
Ugh, the duel. Ugh.
It's a fine duel out of context.
Yeah. But, like, who doesn't... Like, what are we supposed to take from that? That, oh, Brandon's the stronger man. Mm-hmm. He's, like, willing to beat him in a duel. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. You know, one of the things we praised the book about was that it was about these sisters and that we don't really have a lot of scenes with men. Mm-hmm. So to add scenes between these men and make it about them and make it about their conquest, it just rubs me such the wrong way. It just really bothered me in the miniseries, which it had some really good decisions that it made. So it's so weird to me that they were like, oh, we have to make this about sex. As if Jane Austen hasn't proven herself as someone that can sell books without explicit, like, I mean, listen, both of us have read and talked about romance novels on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, I don't mind reading, like, sex in books. Like, I think that's great, especially in YA books when they're, like, very honest about it and have, like, good discussions about it. But this is Jane Austen. Like, I just – I don't know. Maybe I'm articulating myself poorly, but to, like, add sex to these adaptions just feels really cheap, to borrow your word.
You're putting it just fine. There's mm-hmm. no point to them. It's just, like, mm-hmm. they don't trust the audience that they have to throw in these sensational things. And, like, logically – and I know they leave it out of both adaptations about all the how people gossip and the news spreads far and wide. If Colonel Brandon and this Willoughby dude, who, like, everyone knows that they're both, like, after Marianne, fight a duel for her honor, that, like, whether everyone knows or not, of course it's going to get back to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I could, like, belabor the point, and, like, I don't want to because I did like some of the miniseries, but it's just... It's so unfair to viewers, I think, to mm-hmm. think that you have to add sex to this story like that.
Yeah, the movie does a beautiful job conveying a lot of these things in just a moment without even having to say anything. Like how it takes out Willoughby's whole confession
yes. and
regretting that he'll have to deal with Marianne marrying someone one day and it may be someone he doesn't like. They managed to do it with, like, a 30-second scene at the end of the movie.
I cannot wait to talk about this with you. Like, it's embarrassing because in the show notes I say my favorite adaptation choice twice about two different things. And this is the second thing. I thought this was brilliant. Like, brilliant.
Flippin' Emma Thompson.
Oh, of course she won the screenplay for this. This was brilliant. It's a perfect example of knowing your medium, mm-hmm. right? In books, you have to be pretty explicit because you can't really, like, have a character looking out into the distance and having it convey a thought, right? It's two separate mediums. You can do stuff in books that you can't in writing that you can't do in a visual medium, mm-hmm. just like you can do vice versa. And I think both of us kind of had a little bit of a problem with Willoughby's, like, potential redemption here, but I understood why it happened. But to take it out completely and instead all you get is some looks by Will, it just, oh, it's so good. I can't get over, like, that scene with him on the horse. It conveys it perfectly. You know that he loved Marianne. You know that he's regretful. Mm-hmm. And you know that he, like, feels bad. And you know that, like, he's jealous of Brandon. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's in a moment.
And it's just, he accepts it. He accepts mm-hmm. it. He regrets it, but he accepts it. And on top of that, he still can afford his horse.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, yeah, he married the fancy Miss Morton. But it's just such a brilliant adaption choice, mm-hmm. like, just from a technical point of view, that it really just spoke volumes. We didn't need that scene. Ugh, I can't get over how good it was.
And I don't know if that was Ang Lee or Emma Thompson, but whoever it was, if it was a combination of two, bravo, and Greg Weiss acted it beautifully.
Yeah, and, you know, we do get the scene in the miniseries where Dominic Cooper's Willoughby says everything to Eleanor, basically just exactly like it happens in the book, mm-hmm. and it's fine. I think that the scene is nice.
Yeah, it does become a bit of, like, an exposition dump.
Yeah,
especially mm-hmm. spoken aloud.
Yeah, you gotta show, not tell. Isn't that the, like,
mm-hmm.
visual
it's mediums? So wonderfully effective and efficient, which like you said, it's so hard to do just conveying it. Can't say enough mm-hmm. words about it. It's fabulous. It's fantastic.
And it streamlines it, right? Because mm-hmm. the movie is, like, 2 hours and some change. Mm-hmm. And the miniseries is about 3 hours. The book is it's a 50-chapter book. It took us, you know, five chapters every couple weeks, like, a fair amount of time to read it. So it's really smart the way that it's streamlined in the movie to be a really concise, tight story that explains everything that it needs to, mm-hmm. but it takes thoughtful steps in order to do it. And I was very blown away from it from an adaptation perspective.
There were just a lot of like little things that I noticed in the movie that I would note down, like, oh, they changed, for example, like Eliza, little Eliza's name to Beth.
Yeah.
And those sort of things.
Because like, it is confusing.
Yeah. And that's what it would happen. I'd be like, oh, they did that. They didn't do that. They didn't include Anne, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, it makes more sense because one, you don't need it. Or two, it's less confusing for the audience. It's fantastic. And it just feels like sometimes it was a little too literal from the miniseries. Which, I mean, when you're adapting something, I understand, because you want the people who already know and love the book to feel like they're getting their due.
Yeah.
And not to like poo-poo Andrew Davies' adaptation skills, because he's done several others before. Like I mentioned, he did Vanity Fair. Like you said, he did Pride and Prejudice. He did War and Peace. And I've seen that miniseries. I love that miniseries. That is not a light book to condense effectively. He makes good choices, but mm-hmm. not always.
Yeah, I mean, the miniseries is pretty good. I just don't like the addition of the, like, I don't know if it gets the spirit of the sister relationship like the Emma Thompson version does.
Yeah. Part of it is just because Emma Thompson is just a delightful genius. But I think it also does show the difference between this is a female writer adapting a female-centric book versus mm-hmm. a male writer adapting a female-centric book, which I think we talked about a little bit at some point, how the different perspectives would tell these stories.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you actually predicted that they would lose sight of the sisterhood and focus a little more on the romance and the men and the love triangles.
Well, I'm unhappy to be correct. I mean, it says in the trivia for the movie that Emma Thompson and Kate Winslet lived together during the shoot. Aww. To help them form a natural sisterly bond.
And I think it shows. Everything that I've heard about Emma Thompson, she is so good to her co-workers and has taken a lot of, especially the female co-workers, especially the younger ones, under her wing.
All right, did you know that Kate Winslet and Greg Wise dated?
What?
Yeah, it says they dated briefly in reality before he married Emma Thompson.
What? It's like a 9-year age gap, which isn't terrible.
Between, like, the real people and also...
Well, it's a 20-year-old and 29-year-old.
Yeah.
Possibly 19 and 28-year-old. I don't feel so good about that one.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of adaptation choices, I think we covered, like, some of the biggest ones mm-hmm. for me. Also, you mentioned here in the notes that neither Lucy's were as cunning as you pictured them. And I have to agree. When I read Lucy, I read her voice, like, every word she said, like Regina George. Dripping in venom. Like everything she said, I just pictured, like, oh my God, where'd you get that bracelet? I loved it. Oh my God, that bracelet's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. Like everything I read, and neither Lucy portrayed that. They were both kind of silly, not to borrow that word, but just like,
they're just kind of victims of circumstance, I guess. They were aware.
She seemed in both of them like she cared more about being friends with Eleanor than like getting one over on her.
Yeah.
Unlike the book where it seemed like Lucy was very aware that Eleanor had a crush on Edward.
Yeah, I don't think she was, like, I don't want to call her naive because they both had moments where she would notice that Edward was paying special due attention to Eleanor. Mm-hmm. But I expected more like just knowing looks, just very, not to say that she looked dumb or anything, but just that super perceptive look in her eyes, which both of them kind of missed out on, which, fine, mm-hmm. just different than what I expected.
I agree. I find it interesting that both of the Lucys in both the adaptions that we watched were, like, had the same interpretation, whereas we both kind of saw it differently. I don't know if that's, like, a more modern take on it, but it just so felt to me when I was reading it. I could hear so distinctly the fake sincerity in Lucy's voice.
Yeah, especially with how annoyed Eleanor was with her.
Yeah, it was such like a letdown almost to like have Lucy be just sort of like a laugh instead of more cunning.
Yeah, especially with what happens with her and turning around and going off with Robert. That's, I don't know, especially now that I have Reg's idea about the conspiracy with Robert and Lucy.
I know, it makes it like make a lot more sense, especially with like these nicer Lucys, I guess.
Maybe now an adaptation, a more modern adaptation would show something. It's a fine line, I think, to make sure she doesn't go into that horrid, awful, totally evil, no redemption kind of territory.
That's true, yeah. I mean, it all does work out for everybody. Like, it's not like Lucy is plotting the whole time and makes Eleanor miserable. She doesn't. Everybody sort of ends happy. So I don't begrudge Lucy, and I'm happy she's successful, but...
Yeah. One other thing that I did like in both equally were the Mrs. Dashwoods. Both different, I thought, were quite different. The one from the miniseries, there was something like really statuesque and elegant to her. And she was like, and I kind of felt more that she was dealing with the grieving of her husband's, the loss of her husband and everything. But she still had moments where she was emotional and, you know, where Marianne probably got her more impractical side, I guess you could say. Because mm-hmm. they're both, like you said, they both had those times when they were looking at different houses that they could rent. And Eleanor would have to say, you know, we can't afford this. And I think in the adaptation, she's just like, she basically accuses Eleanor of just not considering their feelings regarding it. And Eleanor's like, no, we just can't afford it. And in the movie, she's a lot more outward with her emotions. And I think you get the sense that maybe she's not the person who made all the important decisions in the household before Mr. Dashwood died. But I still had so much affection for both of them and their different performances.
No, I agree. It's different takes on the character. And I don't know if either of them are necessarily even what I pictured, mm-hmm. which is totally fine. But I don't know. I mean, those are kind of like the biggest adaptation things that stood out to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Are we missing any?
I know sure you disliked the ending.
Oh, the ending.
Of the miniseries.
It's so stupid. He's like just chasing chickens and it ends. And there's this weird sappy scene of Brandon just like spinning Marianne in circles. I mean, we both said like the book ends weird too.
It does. And both versions have more scenes with Marianne and Brandon and their growing affection for each other. And actually there was one of them where Marianne was just getting annoyed at everyone being like, so Colonel Brandon. And I actually understood that. I'm like, oh, I kind of understand now why she was pushing him away. It's because everyone was just like trying to push him onto her. And she's like, no, I'm not even going to be in the same room as him just because you guys are so annoying. And it was like a 30-second moment. And I really love that. And I love that both of them also showed scenes of their growing affection where they actually, where you could see where the tiny little spark would grow from.
Yeah, I totally agree. Bringing her the music in the miniseries, like the music for the piano, and getting her a piano in the movie,
and just like her really working at it, because he said, "I really do think you can do it, even though you don't think you can." And she's like, "Well, gonna try."
Yeah, no, I see it a lot more in the adaptions. They're just like little things. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you.
Yeah, but. I kind of like the stupid ending more than you did.
Oh, I thought it was so stupid. He's just chasing the chickens. I mean, it's not like the book ends that great, and the movie, you know, ending with the wedding is fine.
And that good scene, that good shot that we love.
Yeah, but the miniseries ended really stupid. I'm sorry.
He was very like flaily and acting out, and I, in my mind, was being stupid to make Eleanor laugh. Because he's just so happy, and she's looking at him thinking, God, that's hot.
It's interesting that in the book, Edward reconciles with his family, and they don't really show that in either of the adaptions. I mean, I'm not missing it necessarily, mm-hmm. but And maybe it's because the book is a little bit more explicit about exactly how much money everybody has. So we don't really need any information more that Edward isn't just going to be a priest. Like, he's also still going to get his inheritance.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much as he would have gotten before, but...
The important part was mostly, like, in the movie, Fanny is definitely the representation of her family and how mad they are about it.
Yeah.
We do miss out on clever, cunning Lucy worming her way back into the family.
Oh, my gosh. I still am nonstop laughing about the scene where, in the movie where Lucy tells Fanny. It's so funny.
There are two moments of Eleanor that just I just remembered. There was one moment, I think, in the movie, which I disagreed with a little bit because, if I'm not mistaken, Marianne was a lot meaner to Eleanor about having feelings, and Eleanor's just weeping, going like, no, I'm really hurting over this. And then, you know, Marianne warms up to her about it and comforts her sister. It was a great moment, well-acted moment, but I kind of missed how Marianne was the one who just on her own felt bad for Eleanor and sees her own pain because Eleanor needs someone to do that for her. Yeah, and I think that's one of the first of two times that Emma Thompson cries in the movie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Emma Thompson cries, world cries. But I forget who it was. Maybe it was Hayley Atwell. Or maybe it was Emma Thompson herself, where Emma says that as a general rule, she only cries like once. She tries to only cry once a project on screen. Like she doesn't want to be crying throughout the whole thing because when she cries, she wants it to really impact.
Yeah, I still hate, and it's this way in the book too, how when Edward tells her that Lucy's married to Robert and he's there, she just like freaks out. I understand it because she's like clearly been bottling up her emotions forever. It was a lot. It was like, Eleanor, just let him propose to you. Poor Edward.
But there's this moment that I'm slightly terrified by, but also like think is some brilliant acting from Emma Thompson, where her sobs just turn into just the happiest smile. It's almost terrifying.
But it's... I mean, this kind of goes into the discussion question we had, that what we wish were in the adaptions but weren't. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the thing that I wanted was maybe just more sister stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like the adaptions are pretty expansive. I just would have maybe wanted it to be a little bit more about the sisters and less about the men, maybe.
Even more time with all three of the sisters would have been great. But, you know, the book isn't kind to Margaret. I did like in the adaptation, the miniseries, when they were first talking about the pending visit from the Dashwoods, and they were all just sitting around kind of making each other laugh. Moments like that would have been, like, more moments like that would have been great.
Yeah, we do get some of Mrs. Jennings and Mr. Dashwood, and in the movie they're just like my favorite people ever.
I will disagree with you on Mrs. Jennings once
No,
there were moments I thought she was like super accurate to the book, and I thought she was really funny. And other times I thought, oh, where's the other half of Mrs. Jennings that I love, who's actually so much more affectionate, sharp, and empathetic and loyal, instead of just another. Oh yeah, they killed off Mrs. Jennings' daughter in the movie.
Oh, they did, and I forgot about that. And they also changed Colonel Brandon's backstory. It's not that his brother married the Eliza, it's just that she wasn't rich enough.
Yes, they kind of made his story a little more similar to like Edward's, and almost will to Edward's, really,
which is an interesting choice. Mm-hmm. Because I kind of liked the way that the older younger brother dynamic mirrored the Edward Robert thing. It kind of foreshadowed it a little bit, so I thought that was an interesting choice. There's a really funny line in the miniseries when Robert meets Eleanor, and he says something like, oh, Edward said you were really pretty, but I didn't really believe him because he doesn't have, like, that great of taste in women, but, like, oh, you are pretty.
No, I was going to say I kind of want more of the Burns, but, I mean, a lot of that was taken out in general with the just how they made Lucy and Eleanor just these besties.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think it hit like the high, they all both hit the high points, really.
Yeah, no, it hit everything I wanted them to. I, you know,
for as much as we've like complained about the miniseries, it is a very good, very enjoyable miniseries.
Oh, I really liked it. And the sex stuff is only in the beginning. So if you're watching it for the first time, don't be jarred by the fact that it opens with this ridiculous sex scene.
Yeah.
I really did like the miniseries, and it went by very quickly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think we chose well with our adaptation choices to cover.
I think so. They've done Jane proud, I think.
If so, my last like question that I have here is, if the book was being adapted today, what would you want to see? Like, anything different?
Hmm. Well, we talked about all the changes we want for Lucy. Justice for Lucy. Definitely more of the sister stuff.
I was thinking along the lines of doing sort of like a more modern day version. Mm-hmm. Like, would it work? You know, like a Clueless? I think it would work, though. I think the Willoughby thing could, like, work really well in our more modern...
I mean, you can almost even do it with, like, two best friends instead of sisters.
Oh.
Just two girls who are really super close.
I want them to be sisters, Annie. Okay. Like sisters.
Okay, they can be sisters.
Yeah. And you make a good point that diverse casting your characters would be a nice thing to see.
Yeah, like imagine, okay, it just hit me. 1920s Harlem.
Oh my god. Okay. It hit me.
That's it. That's all I got so far.
Okay.
1920s well, Harlem. No one... Jazz age, flappers. It's heading a little too much into Gatsby territory, but like we have like jazz singers, maybe Willoughby is a smooth talking like mixed race boy.
Oh my
boy.
Goodness.
I have Jesse Williams in my head.
Oh, the minute you said Willoughby, I saw it so clearly in my mind.
Okay, he's got a fedora and it doesn't look stupid.
Okay, yeah. I totally see it now.
Because that's still in the era where there's like propriety, you know, propriety and the older generation is there wanting.
And
like,
Colonel Brandon could still be a war hero.
He just could like still be World a war War hero. One hero. A little shell shock because of World War One.
Yes.
Oh, I wish I were a better writer.
Oh, no. Because
I would
be,
want to put
no
this down.
No one steal this. Yeah, no one steal our idea. We're copywriting it here. Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, we've done it.
We've
we
cracked
solved
it. Because we've got everything that I wanted. I wanted something that was a little more updated time period, and I wanted more diversity in casting.
All right. So anything more than you want to talk to about Sense and Sensibility, or...
Just that I'm going to miss it.
I know. I'm going to miss it too. It was so lovely.
It was. It's been fun. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how Jane as a writer evolves, especially since mm-hmm. her second book out of the many is her biggest one.
Which is... Can you hear my drum roll?
Pride and Prejudice.
Oh my god, this is going to be crazy. I have this book like memorized.
I know the story so well, but again, haven't read it that I know of.
No, and we can like I very distinctly remember the first time I read it, like the feelings I had. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I can really rehash that. So it won't be like totally different experience. And we won't spoil it or anything. So
yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, no, we're gonna have a great time.
This is gonna be good.
So we're gonna take a little bit of a break, but I mean it's the holidays, so everybody. I imagine it's taking a break. So our first Pride and Prejudice episode.
It won't be till the new year. Read up, catch up on your other reading, hit your goals for the year.
Pride and Prejudice is a little bit longer than Sense and Sensibility. It's 61 chapters. We're still going to do every 2 weeks, 5-chapter increments. And then the last grouping of chapters, it'll just be 6 chapters till the end. Because that's the easiest way to do it.
It'll be great.
I'm so excited. It'll be so nice to start the new year fresh with a new book, and I'm really excited to read it along with everybody. Anything else you want to tell our friends?
No, I think that covers it from here. Jesse, tell people where they can find us.
Yeah, so in the interim, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at thedailynightly.com. Remember, Nightly is spelled with a K-N-I-G-H-T-L-E-Y. Our Goodreads account that we might update. We're at Twitter at Nightly @NightlyPod, Instagram @TheDailyNightly, And you can reach us at email at thedailynightly@gmail.com, and we can share your email live on air.
Yes, keep the awesome commentary and discussions coming. We love you guys.
Those were such thoughtful letters that we got from Regina and Liz, and I can't wait to hear more. So
special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for our super awesome music at the top and bottom of the episode. And special thanks to my dear co-host, Jesse.
I know, you know, I wanted to give Annie a shout out because Annie edits our episodes and produces them and uploads them and writes the witty commentary. And it's amazing because her job is crazy and at all hours. And I make her record on weekends so she doesn't have that much turnaround time a lot of times to edit. And she does an amazing job. And she deals with me who's like unable to do anything technology related. So...
Oh, and you keep us organized and focused, and you are a joy to talk to, so I'm happy to do it. You have helped make 2019 a fantastic, fun, thoughtful year.
Oh, Annie. Yeah, I hope everybody is successful in their 2019 reading goals, and if not, you did as best you could, and you'll do better next year.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so I'll see you in the new year, Annie.
See you in the new year, and I'll probably be bugging you, like, tomorrow, so... Take care.
Perfect. Perfect. And in the interim, everybody, happy reading.
Happy reading.